It's Film Week. I'm John Horn, host of KPCC's The Frame. I'm sitting in for Larry Mantle today. We have lots of new releases to cover for you heading into this weekend, as well as several that will be out next week for the Independence Day holiday. Then later on in the show, we're going to talk with our critics and an expert on Shakespeare about what makes a good film adaptation of a classic work of literature. But first, joining us to review this week's new releases are Claudia Puig. She's the president of the LA Film Critics Association and KPCC Film Week critic Lael Lowenstein. Claudia and Lael, welcome.
Thanks, John.
So we're going to start with Spider-Man Far From Home. And my math might be off, but I think it's the 479th installment in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Tom Holland reprises his role as the friendly neighborhood web slinger. It also stars Zendaya, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Samuel L. Jackson. It's directed by John Watts. And if I have the timing right, it starts after Avengers Endgame? Do
That's
I have that right?
That's exactly right. You're right on all counts.
Okay. So what do you think?
Well, let me just back up a second and say that when the previous installment of this new reboot
so
came
out. So this is
Reboot 3 and the sequel to Spider-Man Homecoming. I remember thinking, God, do I really have to go see another Spider-Man? Is this necessary? And I was so glad that I did, because this was a fresher, a reinvigorated, a much more energetic Spider-Man than I'd seen in a long time. And, you know, we're going back to the Sam Raimi ones, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. We also had Andrew Garfield. We'd like to forget that chapter. this is British actor Tom Holland, who just brings this incredible kind of youthful energy, great sense of humor, and John Watts, the director of 500 Days of Summer, who came in and just brought really fresh eyes. As with others in the Marvel universe, the extended Marvel universe, there is an important sense of interconnectedness or kind of ability to read between the different Marvel films. That works in this case. It begins with a really sort of tongue-in-cheek in memoriam sequence to the Avengers that died.
Or did they?
Maybe they didn't. I don't know. Some did, some didn't. And then it also feeds into a high school news telecast of the explanation about the blip that happened during the 5-year period when half of humanity was wiped out only to come back.
So truly fake news.
Right. Exactly. What I love about this film is, much like the last one, Spider-Man Homecoming, it brings a relevancy, sort of a currentness, the whole fake news issue, there's a lot of, you know, don't believe everything you read on the internet kind of thing, or maybe you should. It's got Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio, possibly a hero, maybe not, who knows. And it's got great turns by Samuel Jackson, was Nick Fury, it's got Kobe Smulders. It's got some terrific references to everything that we expect to see, but it's, again, it's that youthful freshness. And a lot of it had to do with that take on, you know, growing up. That Spider-Man is really, he's the goofiest of the heroes.
Is he still in high school?
He's kind of ish still in high school. I mean,
it's very
really
long.
He's going for his GED.
Yeah.
And graduation is overrated.
The really dry, sardonic, you know, supporting cast, Zendaya as MJ, just I really like the way that the cast is peopled by, you know, not necessarily the classic cookie cutter people that we expect to see in these films, and so it brings it forward in a whole new way, and I think there's going to be a lot more life in Spider-Man.
You're going to have to wait a couple days, because this is a 4th of July release. It's in wide release starting on Tuesday. Spider-Man Far From Home stars Tom Holland, Zendaya. John Watts directed the film, written by Chris McKenna and Eric Sommer. It's rated PG-13 and wide release next Tuesday. Now we're going to talk about Midsommar. It's a horror film from writer-director Ari Aster, who also wrote and directed the 2018 film Hereditary. Florence Pugh and Jack Rayner star in the film about a couple who travel to Sweden for a village's midsummer festival, only they discover it's a little like the Hotel California. You could check out anytime you want, but you can never leave. Claudia, let's talk about Midsommar.
I really like this movie. It's. I will start by saying it's 2 hours and 20 minutes, but I was never for one second feeling the length.
I saw it last night, and I looked at my watch, and I said, I literally thought my watch was off by an hour because it went by so fast.
Yeah, no,
we're
probably
agree.
At that same screening. I found it so unsettling and sinister. At moments it was a little uneven, but it was so watchable, and it gets under your skin in a creepy way. And the premise is fresh and freaky, and it's just disturbing. I thought Florence Pugh was mesmerizing. It starts in this really, really viscerally, it grabs you in because she experiences this terrible tragedy. So she's mired in her grief, and she's got this boyfriend who's really not a great boyfriend, by saying it mildly. He's this weird passive aggressive kind of guy. He's going off with his guy friends
his
to
bros.
Sweden. Yeah, his bros. And he sort of invites her to come along because he feels guilty because she's gone through this terrible tragedy, expecting her to say no, but she says yes. And nobody really seems to want her there. And things get worse from the minute they set foot. But it's so interesting because it's so bucolic and beautiful, and there's flowers, and there's these hippie-like people in these folk costumes. And so you just feel like it's this maybe, and then there's eternal sunshine because it's a land of midnight sun, of course. And then it just gets so dark in this very bright way. And the contrast of that, I think, is fascinating.
I think there is an attention to detail in this film that's extraordinary.
Yes.
In production design, costume design, food styling. All those
tea?
Little things.
Mushroom.
Yes, yeah. There's
the
like a kind of a Sweeney Todd kind of element about what it is that you're actually eating. The music is done by a composer named The Hacks and Cloak. The music is unbelievable.
The music is amazing. It really helps create that edgy feeling. You are not on the edge of your seat in the same way that you would be with a scare. I mean, I was never like frightened, but I was deeply unsettled, and it works. I thought it was better than Hereditary,
and I think we also should say something about Florence Pugh, who I saw in Lady Macbeth in 2016. I mean, she is not old. I think she's 23 years old. She acts like a veteran.
Yes.
I think she has a bright future ahead of her. I think she's by far the best actor in the entire film.
She is.
And it really is dependent on her performance. And I thought,
yeah, because you have Will Poulter, who's kind of in the bro mode, and you don't really care about him that much. And the boyfriend is just throwaway. It's really the production design, this sort of bucolic summer camp splendor, and these kind of, sort of mild, smiling looking Swedish hippies. And, it has such a the tonal clash. What's going on underneath it is so fascinating.
And even though it's a completely fantastic made up world, you never doubt for a second that it is real. I mean, it feels like this place exists. And
yes.
I think that's Ari Aster's great achievement in this film. It does feel like this is a place that you could go visit.
It made me never want to go
not
to Sweden.
Not that you would want to. Yes, I know.
Which I've been wanting to see.
The Swedish Tourism Board is not going to be that happy about that. Again, it's a movie you're going to have to wait a little bit for. Midsommar stars Florence Pugh and Jack Rayner. Ari Aster wrote and directed the film. It's rated R for reasonable reasons, and it is in wide release starting next Wednesday. Now we're going to talk about a movie that may be a little less scary. It's Yesterday. It's a musical fantasy comedy. It's about a struggling musician who, thanks to this kind of global electronic grid thing, wakes up in an alternate universe where the music of the Beatles and the Beatles themselves and some other little things have never existed. Himesh Patel and Lily James star in the film. It was directed by Danny Boyle and written by Richard Curtis. Lael, what did you think of Yesterday?
Yesterday was not everything I wanted it to be, but it had elements that I really wanted. I love Danny Boyle, Slumdog Millionaire, Trainspotting, 127 Hours. His films are so energetic and kinetic, and there's so much edge to them. And then to have Richard Curtis, who is the author of Notting Hill and Love Actually, films that have that wry British sensibility, I thought, what's going to happen when you bring them together? There was too much Richard Curtis and not enough Danny Boyle in this case. I didn't feel like it was a melding of the voices that went particularly well. It started out fairly strong, and it started out as a great conceit, but it ran out of steam. I felt like it didn't know where it wanted to go. And then there's a late sort of third act,
jumping the shark
kind of a thing, where a particular character
it's
is introduced that really did not work for me.
You're talking about a visit with a certain musician
a certain
who will
person.
Not be identified.
No, we can't spoil that.
Okay.
But
But it just, you know,
it spoiled the movie for me.
It did for me as well. I thought
you can't spoil it, but it did spoil it.
It had so much potential, and everyone I know wants to see this movie. You know, it's one of those, like, yes, it's going to be great. And yes, the music of the Beatles propels it forward and is highly enjoyable, but the trailer gave away most of the best gags.
It definitely did. You know, the conceit is clever enough. It's a high concept. It's this lightweight bauble, and there were some moments, like when they sang together, he and Lily James, they have a nice chemistry, and Himesh Patel has a nice singing voice, but it sort of made the Beatles repertoire sort of sound like kind of minimal or just sort of a lightweight in a way that
right.
it's not, because it was kind of like greatest hits kind of thing. It's I felt like it's intermittently charming. If you look too closely, it's not. And I totally agree. It had way too much Richard Curtis and not enough Danny Boyle. Richard Curtis in the worst. I mean, you know, I actually am a mixed fan of Love Actually. I loved Four Weddings and a Funeral. Notting Hill, not so much. But this feels like it's become kind of his formula, and yes. it didn't work.
It felt sometimes like Himesh Patel was playing someone who was playing someone in a Richard Curtis
film.
It was there.
Exactly.
It was way too self-aware.
I have one last question. This is kind of the morality of the story. It is kind of a Dear Evan Hansen device where Himesh Patel's character, because nobody has remembered the Beatles music, assumes or pretends that he has written it and performs it. And it feels like it sets up a moral quandary that maybe it doesn't quite pay off, that he is, you know, he's a fraud because, and I think this is not spoiling anything, he is pretending this music is his own. And I'm not quite sure what you guys thought of whether or not he got his just rewards for pretending to be somebody he wasn't.
I feel like that was a problem. It let him off the hook. I mean, there is this moment where you think he's going to be found out and it kind of goes in a different direction, which in a way I thought was sort of okay. I have a bigger problem with it is that, you know, I kind of like to think of what does pop music or what does music look like without the Beatles influence? Mm-hmm. And it would have gone completely differently. At one point, somebody talks about Coldplay,
Oasis,
like,
I think.
Yeah. Right. But I mean, think about it. What pop music would be radically different without the Beatles influence? Because people who've been either directly or indirectly influenced by them are legion. So it doesn't explore that, which I think would be really interesting. It's just like, it's just a gimmick. And I really wanted to like it more. I did like the music. I thought he sang well. I thought he and Lily James had nice chemistry, but it ends up becoming this really kind of silly love story by the end.
Yes.
And one thing I will say is Ed Sheeran plays an elevated version of Ed Sheeran. And that part of the movie I thought was very clever. Yesterday is the film. It's directed by Danny Boyle and it stars Himesh Patel and Lily James. It's rated PG-13. It's now in wide release. You don't have to wait for this one. And if you're interested in hearing more about the making of the film, you can check out my interview with Himesh Patel. It aired on The Frame earlier this week and you can find it at kpcc.org/The Frame, and we'll link it on the Film Week page as well, kpcc.org Film Week. Okay, we did Midsommar, one scary film. Let's do Annabelle, another scary film. Annabelle Comes Home. It's the latest installment in the Conjuring universe. Gary Dauberman wrote and directed the film, his first in both categories. It stars Vera Farmiga, Patrick Wilson, Madison Iceman, and Katie Sarife. Claudia.
Well, if you like horror thrillers, I would advise going to see Midsommar and not Annabelle Comes Home, unless you really, really love the Conjuring universe. This is the seventh movie in the canon. I'm not sure it needed a seventh movie. I feel like it's pretty exhausted. It felt like in the old days we'd say made for TV, kind of disposable. It's set in the 70s. It had this Brady Bunch-like house that became a house of horrors, but, you know, the production design was sort of interesting in that 70s way. But it ended up becoming kind of more a haunted house film than it was a scary doll story. And it's just a succession of scary stuff and kind of, you know, bumps and jolts, and it's not anything special.
Well, and I think that's an interesting comparison because Midsommar, I think there's maybe one jump scare and it's a phone ringing very early in the film.
Yes,
and
yes.
Yet I think these kinds of movies, and I suspect this is true of Annabelle, have a lot more jump scares that maybe not be earned.
Yes. I mean, they rely on jump scares too much. And, I liked a couple of the Conjuring movies, and Annabelle is a just terrifying looking doll. But and the fact that this is sort of loosely based on these, you know, famous paranormal investigators. Unfortunately, Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, who are the better part of this franchise, are absent for most of the movie. So it just doesn't work.
That's Annabelle Comes Home. It's the horror film from first-time writer-director Gary Dauberman. It stars Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson. It's rated R. It is in wide release. More film reviews are just ahead on Film Week. When we return, Claudia and Leo will tell us about Ophelia, a reimagining of Shakespeare's Hamlet, told from Ophelia's perspective. We'll also tell you about the drama Euphoria, starring Alicia Vikander. I'm John Horn, in for Larry Mantle today. We'll be back with more of Film Week in just a minute. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm John Horn, in today for Larry Mantle. We're joined by critics Leo Lowenstein and Claudia Puig, who is the president of the LA Film Critics Association. Claudia, one quick thing. I think we should say Midsommar has the best and worst sex scene that I've seen in a movie in a very long time. Would you agree?
Yes. Oh, yes. It is one of the weirdest and strangest and unsexiest sex scenes you will ever see. Okay. With a lot of nudity, though.
Definitely. Yeah. Worth checking out. Now, let's talk about the documentary Maiden. It's a British film directed by Alex Holmes about Tracy Edwards, who in 1989 became the skipper of the first ever all-female crew to enter the Whitbread Round the World race. This is a 9-month race that covers tens of thousands of miles. The film features interviews with and archive footage of Edwards and her crew. I love this movie. I hope you guys did too. Lael?
Absolutely loved it. And what a revelation to me. I mean, I didn't know this story. And the fact that, you know, as of 30 years ago, women hadn't even entered into this race, let alone skippered a boat, let alone had an all-female crew. This was like the equivalent of having, you know, women enter the Citadel or something at this point. So Tracy Edwards was this young girl, sort of from a troubled home, like her always getting into difficulty, and, you know, decided she had this dream. She wanted to skipper a boat. She'd been a cook on this one ship and on this one boat, and decided, you know, gosh darn it, I want to do this thing. And so she gets this crew together. It reminded me a little bit of the Shackleton movie, Endurance, where there are the interviews, present day interviews with the women who were then, you know, quite young and really didn't know what they were doing, but just kind of had a dream and decided to pursue it. And it's intercut with this grainy archival footage, which is, you know, though the technology is sort of primitive, it's low res, you know, it works so well because you have this really you are there sense of being right in the middle of this boat and these waves in this daunting journey, which is really quite stunning.
Well, not only is the technology primitive, the commentators and the other sailors are primitive
as
well.
Oh my God, talk about primitive in their
in terms of the misogyny and how they judge whether or not women could sail. I mean, Tracy Edwards, before this race, the only job she could get on a racing boat was as a cook.
Right.
So she could handle a spatula, but not a spinnaker.
Right.
And I'm not going to spoil anything. Let's just say that she shows some of these other men up in a big way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Claudia, what did you think of the movie?
I loved it. And in fact, it won the Audience Award at the Mendocino Film Festival, which I programmed. In which John attended this year. And it's worthy of so many awards. It is such a powerful story. I found it exhilarating to watch because I also didn't know the story. And I'm not a sailing fan particularly. Right. And I think it works just as well if you are or aren't. It's inspiring. It's tautly edited. I liked the interspersing of the women as they are now and then the women when they were younger. And I loved hearing about her backstory. I thought it was really gracefully kind of juxtaposed. I liked the use of the archival material. I was completely engrossed in the story. It really celebrates the perseverance of a woman. It's a true feminist tale, even though she herself would not call herself a feminist back in the day.
She's asked, does she consider herself a feminist? And she says, well, no. And then towards the end of the film, it's a reimagining of what it means to be a feminist.
Exactly. And I like that they also didn't sugarcoat how harsh she could be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, people were saying she was tough. She had this, you know, she would yell at people. She was stressed, understandably, because, you know, everybody, you know, was discrediting her and their whole effort. And I like those kind of backward glances. Mm-hmm. The only thing I would have liked to have seen was, we know she was a cook. We know she loved to sail, but we never really found out how she learned to actually sail.
Right.
And I would have liked a little bit on that.
Well, you can check out the interview that we did with her.
A little
on
promotion
the frame.
Here.
So we are discussing the documentary Maiden. It's from director Alex Holmes. The film is rated PG-13. If you have a daughter, take your daughter.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You can see it at the Arclight Hollywood in the Landmark Theater in West LA. And if you want to hear more on the film from director Alex Holmes and Tracy Edwards, who is the subject, you can check check out my interview with them that we aired earlier this week on The Frame. You could find it at kpcc.org/theframe or at our Film Week page, kpcc.org/filmweek. Okay, another feminist story, Ophelia. It's a reimagining of Shakespeare's Hamlet told from the perspective of the play's female protagonist who, if you know your Hamlet, Ophelia doesn't do a lot in Hamlet. She just kind of watches as things unfold. Claire McCarthy directs the film based on the book by Ophelia by Lisa Klein. Daisy Ridley stars as Ophelia. Claudia, you want to start us on this?
Yes. She doesn't do a lot in the original, but she does do a lot more here. So this is a good week for female empowerment films.
Yes.
I would say that this is uneven. It looks beautiful. It's engaging. It's beautifully shot. It's sumptuous. It's, of course, a twist on Hamlet as seen through the female perspective. I think Daisy Ridley was good as Ophelia. I think Naomi Watts, who plays a dual role as Queen Gertrude and her sister, mm-hmm. who I don't think actually was in the original.
I don't think
no,
so.
No, I think they invented that, is quite good.
They invent a lot here.
Yeah, they do. Clive Owen had a very bad wig, but if you get past that distraction, you know, it's always nice to see him. I felt this, you know, it was a kind of a clever reimagining, rethinking. She certainly became a more proactive figure than she was in, you know, Shakespeare's version. And I don't know. I would have liked it to be a little bit more compelling because I felt like it sort of was strong in the beginning and then kind of
petered
meandered.
Out.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
I think I liked it a little bit more than Claudia. I felt it was a particularly good example of how strong casting can work in a film's favor. Daisy Ridley bringing some of that spunk and grit that she is known for as Rey in the Star Wars movies to this role, and that working really well in her favor. Much as, let's say, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead by Tom Stoppard. It was a completely different take on Hamlet with two very, very minimal characters. This is a look at Ophelia as a protagonist, not, let's say, a very proactive, very motivated, very wily, and sort of thinking on her feet kind of heroine who is much smarter than she's given credit for. And I liked the idea of that. I liked seeing her be an agent for change, being someone who doesn't, let's say, end up where you think she's going to if you read the original.
Yeah. But I didn't really buy the romance very much, and it cribbed from Romeo and Juliet. Mm. And
I wasn't as interested
in the
romance.
Marriage.
Yeah.
No, I was more interested in her, kind of, her...
her scrappiness.
I thought they did a pretty good job of developing her character, but I thought by shoehorning the romance in, it kind of diminished it a little bit.
And I would say for people who know Shakespeare, there are a lot of little Easter eggs about lines from other plays mm-hmm. that are kind of dropped in there.
But, and Get Thee to a Nunnery is done a little differently.
But we'll talk more about Shakespeare later. Ophelia is the film. It's written by Semi Chellis. It's directed by Claire McCarthy, and it stars Daisy Ridley. It's rated PG-13, and it's playing at Lemley's Monica Film Center in Santa Monica, Lemley's Playhouse in Pasadena, Lemley's North Hollywood, and at the Arena Cine Lounge Sunset. Now, Blue Note Records, Beyond the Notes. It's a documentary from writer-director Sophie Huber about the famous record label, which was home to musical greats like Miles Davis, Thelonious Monk, and John Coltrane. Lael, why don't you start us?
This is a really good documentary. It does a excellent job of introducing you not just to Blue Notes as a label and to the history of it. I didn't know it was created by these two German guys who came over from Berlin, and because of their love of jazz, just decided
in the 1930s, fleeing from the Nazis,
and just exactly, and you know, perhaps it was their own sort of narrative that they brought with them, the whole persecution thing, and that their love of jazz informed their ability to create and bring something new out. And so that's how they created this label, which essentially gave artists incredible freedom. The film does a really nice job of tying in the connection between jazz and hip hop. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of interviews with artists. One of my favorite moments was when Herbie Hancock is talking about working with Miles Davis and playing with him, and how incredibly freeing that was and wonderful. And they're just in the pocket. They're really feeling it. They're in the zone. And then Herbie said, "And I played this chord that was just the wrong chord. I knew it was wrong. I didn't know what was going to happen. I knew it was wrong." And then Miles just went along with it, and he took an accident and he made it into something kind of beautiful.
Because he didn't judge it.
He didn't judge it.
I love that.
And that
was
what was so great about Blue Note.
Claudia?
Yeah, I love what he was trying to say about don't judge yourself as an artist.
That's right.
I thought it was fascinating. And even if you're not a rabid jazz fan, and if you are, you're going to know, obviously, you're going to have known about the history of Blue Note Records. But I do think that the way they tied it together, of course, it's great to hear from Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter. But you also hear from newer hip hop artists and producers, and you find out like Kendrick Lamar's, you know, kind of newfound love of jazz. And how there was a really fascinating thing towards the end of the film, because it really tied sort of the link between jazz and hip hop and how the sociopolitical commentary and how it reflected the times. And one of the producers talks about how when he was young, there were music programs and people would carry instruments around. And when music programs ended in the schools, musicians were forced to turn to turntables. And that's how that began. And so there's all this like really interesting little tidbits about hip hop as well.
Right. The whole idea of improvisation,
yes.
of improvising with what you have available.
The creativity. And I love that the sort of the notion that if we don't keep handing this down and if people aren't aware of what Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter and all these wonderful musicians did, that, you know, we need to concentrate on passing those lessons down. Mm-hmm.
Blue Note Records, Beyond the Notes is the documentary. It's written and directed by Sophie Huber. It's unrated, and you can see it at Lemley's Monica Film Center in Santa Monica. As for Jane is a drama written and directed by Rachel Carey. Cody Horn, Allison Wright, Chloe Levine, and Sarah Steele are in it. It's about a group of women who team up to provide safe but illegal abortions in 1960s Chicago. Claudia?
Well, I was thinking about films like Vera Drake that Mike Lee did, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce the Romanian director's movie, 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days. And those are so compelling and sensitive in terms of how they approach abortion. They're really, and they're both directed by men. I would love to see a really good film about this subject directed by women. Unfortunately, this is not that. It is well-intentioned, and it's certainly timely. Could not be more timely. Mm-hmm. It's just not terribly well-made or well-acted. It feels a little bit kind of amateurish in its production values, and the script is a little clumsy. But it's so well-intentioned, I kind of hate to sort of rake it over the coals.
Lael?
Exactly. I agree with Claudia. It felt almost like you're reading a sort of sixth grade sex ed primer, in terms of the way it hit every conceivable cliche, basically, about, you didn't think you were going to get pregnant because he said he wouldn't. So, all that kind of thing. It just felt very sort of pat, very on the nose. Having said that, the fact that these women actually did create this referral service for women to have safe and safe abortions before Roe versus Wade. And that's such an important thing. And I don't want to minimize what that was, and especially given everything that's going on now.
I think a documentary.
Question.
Yeah.
Would this have been more interesting as a documentary
Absolutely.
As opposed to a
Absolutely.
Narrative film?
Yeah.
And why is that so?
Yeah, I wanted to see the documentary.
Because it's a real story, because it's so important right now. I mean, I guess you could, or you could have told the story in a slightly different way. But I there's a lot of films like that where I feel like I'd rather know the real story as mm-hmm. opposed to how you chose to interpret this story.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to maybe the fictional version of Maiden, which I think they're going to do, or Three Identical Strangers, where you take a great documentary that should just exist on its own and try to make it into a narrative film, which seems often like a bad idea.
Yes.
The film is Ask for Jane. It's a drama starring Cody Horn, Allison Wright, Chloe Levine, Rachel Carey wrote and directed the film. It is unrated and playing at Lemley's Music Hall in Beverly Hills. More just ahead on Film Week with the release of the film Ophelia, which we reviewed earlier today on Film Week. We'll take a look at some of our critics' favorite modern adaptations of Shakespeare's plays and other classic works. We'll also talk with a Shakespeare scholar about what it takes to make a good adaptation of a classic work of literature. I'm John Horn. I'm in for Larry Mantle. We'll be right back after this break. It's Film Week. Welcome back. I'm John Horn, sitting in for Larry Mantle today with critics Claudia Puig and Leo Lowenstein. We have one more movie to get to. It's called Our Time. It's a Mexican drama starring Natalia Lopez, Phil Burgers, and Carlos Regadas, who also wrote and directed the film. It's about a family living in the Mexican countryside, raising Fighting Bulls. Do I have that right?
That is correct. Yes. What it really is about is it's a three-hour examination of marital anguish. And if that sounds like fun to you, have at it. You feel like you wandered into someone's couples therapy session and you're locked in there with them and you're desperately looking to find a way out. It's a painful experience. It's also beautiful to look at. So it's a mixed bag. No, I'm not. I'm not trying to sell it. It looks stunning. The visuals are epic and majestic. There's this one scene of a plane coming into Mexico City that is just, you know, gorgeous. But it feels too much like a solipsistic self-absorbed examination. It's played by the real director and his real wife, and there's, you know, speculation about what may have been going on in their marriage. I don't want to know. But they also have their children in it, and at one point, they're in order to explain sort of the psyche, you have one of the little children doing a very adult voiceover talking about infidelity and desire, and it just feels really off-putting. Unless you're, you know, Regadas is a fascinating director. He is polarizing, but this one did not work for me.
Our Time is the film. It's written and directed by Carlos Regadas, who also stars in the film alongside Natalia Lopez and Phil Burgers. It's unrated, and you can see it if you want at Lemley's Royal Theater in West L.A.